Hey yo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, and I am truly pleased to be joined by a gentleman who, well, he plays in a lot of bands. I mean, he's got Dangerous Toys. He used to play with Dirty Looks, I mean, Broken Teeth. But right now, you're doing some therapy. You got some scream therapy. We got Paul Lydell on the show.
That's right.
To talk about his new band, Scream Therapy. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Awesome. I mean, being a fan of your work for a long time, good to have you back on the show. But Scream Therapy, I mean, tell us all about it.
It's a fairly new band. We have a new album out and several videos on YouTube, and we've been playing shows, and it's going really well. So real good reactions to the album, getting some airplay, and it's cruising along really well.
So what made you kind of want to start this band in this case?
Well, I'm always, I've been a singer for a long, long time, and I like to have, I always like to have a band where I can play the original songs that I wrote for myself to sing. So, and this particular batch of songs came across as kind of a little more heavy and aggressive than things I've done in the past. And so hence the name Scream Therapy. And there's a song called Scream Therapy, and that song kind of summed up the whole reason for for doing the band and having that outlet to let out those emotions, and a lot of people I think can relate to the songs, because a lot of people can the subject matter and things, there's a lot of things that other people can relate to as well. And just the whole idea that it feels good just to let it out. And I think that's what music and rock is about. It always feels better when you go to a show and you're screaming and shouting. So,
you know, and that's the thing, right? I mean, the entire album is just full of these rockers that totally get you going and get you into that, like, you know, metal mood kind of thing. My personal favorite is Thick of Things. I think that one's awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks. That one is about something that people can probably relate to when you find yourself in the center of just this circle of drama swirling around you that you had absolutely nothing to do with creating. So that's what being in the thick of things is.
How long did it take you to write these songs? Like, have you been working on these over years?
No. They, over the course of the pandemic, I experienced an unusual, just period of time where I wasn't writing at all. And then, following that, all of these songs just came out like, at once, more or less. It was just just sort of in a flood. So that I think that's why they all kind of sound cohesive, maybe. Although no one song sounds like the other, I don't think.
No, I would agree with you on that for sure. When it comes down to it, like, what's your process for writing a song? Like, do you kind of come up with a riff first and then you go through the lyrics? Do you how does that work for you?
It's all different ways. Sometimes I'll just hear something in my head and figure it out. Other times I'll be just goofing around on the guitar, and this riff will pop out. And then often I'll take the riff, record that, and then just scat vocals over the top of it. And usually the attitude or the vibe of the riff will inform the subject matter of the vocals. So if it's sort of a dark sounding riff, then often the vocals tend to have a dark sounding slant. Or if it's sort of uplifting, then and it all sort of, I think, just comes out of that subconscious sort of thing where you just sort of sit back and and allow it to take place and try not to second guess very much. The song Thick of Things, I just pressed record and just played and said, okay, whatever I play right now, that's going to be a song. And so that came out that spontaneously.
Wow, that is interesting. Because I was going to ask, we've talked to so many people who say, like, you know, some of them say that writing a song, especially the lyrics, can take them, like, you know, months practically to like labor through it. And then some people just say that, you know, they get things done like super fast and everything just pours out of them. So it sounds like you're kind of in that everything just pours out of you camp.
Sometimes. And then at other times, nothing. You know, like I said, but that that was, like, I've never gone even a few months my entire life since I was very young without writing something, writing a song, right? So I've written many, many, many songs. And then come the pandemic, for whatever reason, I just stopped writing. You'd think, I mean, I know a lot of people either went into super creativity mm-hmm. mode, which I would have expected me to do that. And I was really shocked when, like, there was nothing out. And then following that, then it was just all the stuff that was all just built up in there and it just sort of came out at once. And as for the lyrics, I think I just, I'll get it all kind of done and then just wait for the lyrics to come. And they come, as if, like from a different place. Not like I'm thinking about it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
We've heard that a lot. But I think if people that have been in any kind of creative thing sort of gets the whole writing thing.
Yeah, where it just kind of, you know, like it's almost like you're channeling something and it just manages to arrive in you. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, we've definitely heard that a bunch, and I think it is a very creative aspect for sure.
Yeah, and certainly in this particular case, where like, where I just took on the reins of everything from, you know, from writing it to producing it and recording and all that. So that was it allowed those things that were in the subconscious to just be as they I felt like they should be.
Now, when do you involve the rest of the band in the process? Like, do you kind of create the demo track on guitar, or do you kind of play a little bass along there? Do you put some drums on it before you go to the band?
In this particular case, I did the guitar tracks. I did, in certain places I would have, suggestions of what I thought the drums should be doing, whether it would be, you know, like a certain fill or a certain type of beat or a certain vibe, or, you know, go to halftime here, go to double time here and things like that. And I even made a kind of mouth drums thing, to suggest things like that. And and then in the demos, I played some bass and did all the harmony vocals. And then basically we just did all that over again. So the album was recorded twice or three times, if you want to think of it that way. So we just recorded first the drums, and then I put the guitars on there, and then the vocals, and had Joe G, the bass player, come in and lay down some bass tracks, which he did very quickly. And and then we did mixing and mastering.
How long have you known these guys in the band then?
Well, Joe G, I had just met him, well, pretty much when he came. I got a message from him on Messenger, and he said, "Hey, man, we haven't met, but, you know, I've admired your work for a long time, and I play bass and sing, and if you ever need somebody, you let me know." And so I finished these songs. I'm like, I call. Well, why, you know, what could be nothing to lose? So I had him come over and lay some bass tracks down. And he just absolutely was amazing. So he did the rest of the album. And it was it just went down really easy.
Yeah, that is interesting. Now, I mean, you're in Austin, Texas, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Austin is generally known as a hotbed of music for the most part. I mean, at least to those outside of Austin, for sure. And so do you find that it's easy to kind of connect with musicians there?
It's a pretty small world musically in Austin. I've been here for 30 years. And so the whole musical community is kind of close knit. And so for example, Joe and I knew all of the same people, and I had asked several people about him, and everybody seemed to know him. And so it was sort of surprising that we hadn't run into one another. But you know, as far as the degrees of separation, there's almost none.
Wow. So then what is the live music? I mean, you talk about playing some live shows there. You know, what is that live music scene like, especially for heavy rock?
There's a handful of clubs that in Austin and in the surrounding areas that they cater to like original live hard rock. Maybe not quite so many as there was before, but there still are some, and there's interest, and it seems like a little bit more interest is coming around in like original hard rock, which a few years ago maybe not so much, but it seems to be kind of coming back, it seems.
Now, one of the things that I can see behind you is you've got a lovely collection of guitars. Do you have, like, was there one guitar that you played on the Scream Therapy album, or did you play like a bunch of them?
I did a test. So I played the same riff and recorded the same riff with all my different guitars. And then I took it to the studio when we went before I recorded my tracks, and sat with the engineer. His name is Matt Bray, amazing engineer who also mixed the album, and I had him pick which ones he liked the best. So in sort of a blind test, the two guitars he picked were both guitars that were made by Scott Dalhoover, who plays guitar in Dangerous Toys.
Right.
He has a brand of guitars called Ghost Machine. And so those two guitars were picked. I mean, you know, obviously I had like Les Paul and Explorer and, you know, all these different guitars, and he picked the two Ghost Machines. So I tracked all the rhythms with those guitars. And then for the leads, I think I used the Ghost Machine. I have a Flying V that's also in the logo of the band, as well as the Explorer, I think, also made it on there.
So then, you know, when you go out to play a live show, do you kind of bring, I mean, I guess around Austin, you could bring all of them. Do you, is that something that you would typically do, is bring multiple guitars with you?
No, generally, for all the live shows, I play them entirely for Scream Therapy with the Dean Flying V. This white Dean Flying V that I've had for many, many, many years. And as a matter of fact, I used on the first Dirty Looks album, Cool from the Wire. So that same guitar, that's what's in the Y in this of Therapy in the logo, is that particular Dean, white Dean Flying V.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the one that you're playing in the video as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So for that band, that guitar has just kind of been the one.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's a beautiful looking instrument, absolutely. So, I mean, I assume it plays as nicely as it looks.
Now, I'm getting ready to leave for the Monsters of Rock cruise, playing with Dangerous Toys. And for that one, I'll be playing the two Ghost Machine guitars.
So then what's it like, you know, transitioning over to play with Dangerous Toys?
Well, I've been in the band for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's all pretty much muscle memory at this point. Though we are bringing back like a couple songs from the first record that we haven't played in quite some time. And just to kind of keep it so we're not playing the same set twice on the boat, because you play two shows on the cruise, and but the toys songs are really fun to play, and we for the live shows we will focus primarily on that first record, which was written before I joined the band.
Yeah,
I was still in Dirty Looks at the time.
Do you ever do you still enjoy playing those songs, or do you kind of prefer the stuff that you wrote or were involved with more, or does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter much. I mean, those that was my favorite album when it came out, and they were my favorite band before I was in the band, and so I was already real familiar with, you know, all those songs. And I've always thought they were really fun to play. And watching people lose their mind when we play them is a blast.
So then you were also on the cruise last year, were you as well?
I was, yeah. And all the years subsequent, I know Dangerous Toys has done it 6 or 7 times, I think.
Wow.
this being probably the 8th or 9th. But then last year, a reunited version of Dirty Looks with Jason from Dangerous Toys singing and our friend David Beeson, also playing guitar, played on Monsters of Rock, and that was a blast.
Is it fun then to be able to like just pull out all these old songs from your catalog and just then go and get a chance to perform them live?
Yeah. It's like dusting off a whole bunch of old muscle memory. And, you know, at first it's clunky, and then you get it going and your hands go, oh, you mean this? And then it started to, you know, bring back all these memories of, you know, back in the 80s and 90s when I was touring with Dirty Looks. So it's funny how the songs and the playing of the songs brings back all these memories as you're doing it. So it's, and it's like all those same emotions and everything all kind of come back when you're playing the songs.
Yeah, that is interesting. You know, what's it like being on the cruise? Like, I mean, you obviously you do two shows there, and then like, how do you feel the rest of the time?
Oh, you, I figure out what bands, other bands, there's like, 30 something bands that are playing. And, usually a lot of them are bands that I like. So the challenge is to, figure out how to go to see all the bands that you like. So the cool thing about the cruise is that, you know, all the people in the bands pretty much are fans of everybody else that's, you know, playing. So, you'll see guys from all the bands at all the shows. So, and you know, you could see how they're just fans, just like everybody else. And, it's cool having been in it so many times. It kind of feels like, I don't know, Cheers, where, you know, everybody knows your name, where I recognize a lot of people there, you know, and because a lot of people come back year after year. So it's really, I made a lot of good friends on the cruise, and look forward to seeing them this year.
What are the fan interactions like then? Is it just kind of like, do you get a lot of fan interaction?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what it's about is for the people on the cruise is they get to see the band, but then they also are getting to just hang out and, you know, have a drink with these guys and just hang out, which is an aspect that I personally love to, you know, meet and people. But yeah, I always have to leave like at home, I make sure I have my wallet and my keys when I leave the house. But when I leave the room in the boat, I have to make sure I have a Sharpie with me for signing stuff.
Yeah, I'll bet that must be quite something. Because I mean, we've talked to so many people who've been on the cruise before and who do it regularly. So it always interests me, and I think that I'm going to try to get to it next year, hopefully, because it just seems like
you'll enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, up till now, everything just seems to get in the way of doing it for me, but it mm-hmm. will be great, I know for sure. But, you know, what's it like then doing a live performance there versus, say, doing a live performance at home?
Well, on the boat, you're playing, you are one of a lot of different bands. So, like, when, say, Dangerous Toys performs one of our regular just headlining gigs, you know that all the fans are there and they know all of the songs. On the boat, there's some of the people that know, you know, there's the core fans, but then there's also all these other people that may not have seen the band before or may not be as familiar with it. So it kind of gives you an opportunity to play to people that you haven't played for in the past, and that makes it kind of cool. So consequently, we will stick pretty close to like songs from the first and second album, pretty much. Although we are we're recording new material, and we're going to be playing some of that also on the boat as well.
That must be a lot of fun to finally record some new Dangerous Toys material.
Sure. Yeah. We've been talking about it for years, but now it's finally happening.
Well, I mean, Jason's been around so much. I mean, filling in for singers and just doing everything. So, I mean, he seems like a busy guy and always working.
I think that's common with everybody, and which is why it's taken like so long, but now it seems to be things seem to be coming together, and we've been recording, so, and there's some really cool songs.
Is there ever a point where you could see, like, say, Scream Therapy, Dangerous Toys, and Dirty Looks all on the cruise at one time, just to kind of bring together everything?
Well, I know that Jason and I are kind of against doing anything where Dirty Looks and Dangerous Toys are on the same bill. Because it's just a little bit weird because, you know, being two of the five guys being the same in the two different things is a little bit strange. So so maybe not that. But, you know, as for the other, you know, I'd be up for it, and we could see.
So then, you know, when it comes down to Scream Therapy, like, what kind, besides just the singing, what other kind of itches does that scratch for you in the, in your musical, you know, your musical, like, just your body of music?
It's complete freedom to just create and have it go straight from my brain to the recorder. And come back out, hopefully, like it sounded in my brain, and that's what the album did. I think it sounds pretty much like I pictured it too. I think the new one will as well, because I'm well into writing for the new one too.
Oh wow, that's amazing! So then, you know, what is the long term plan for Scream Therapy?
Well, we plan to build it up and hopefully play on some cool shows, and to keep releasing material and videos, and just build interest in the band, and so that people we'll want to check it out and hopefully be able to get on some bigger shows.
Do you find it a bit easier because of like your name and because of your past to promote Scream Therapy a little bit more?
Yes and no. when I told a lot of people about the project, you know, hey, I said, hey, I'm doing this, you know. Like I'd be telling maybe somebody that's a Dangerous Toys fan or a Dirty Looks fan and say, hey, I'm doing this. And some of them I would detect a sense of disinterest, because it's like, well, I'm only interested in, you know, I'm a fan of, you know, Dangerous Toys. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that there's, just a natural, oh, you're in this band, so I'm going to want to like to check out this thing. So it really does have to, it has to succeed or fail on its own merit.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, I know for myself, like being a fan of Dangerous Toys, being a fan of Dirty Looks, I mean, the second that I found out that it's just like, oh, Paul Lydell's working on something else, I mean, I'm interested just right off the bat. So, I mean, it is interesting
people,
to hear.
Yeah, some people maybe like that. And others, like I said, would be telling them about that, and I would expect them to go, oh, really? Oh, that's cool. And they just go, oh, all right.
Yeah, I guess music just drives people the way it, like in different ways, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So then when it comes down to the music videos, I mean, certainly with Run, you've got a little bit of story action going on. Like, who conceives of the music videos?
Well, with that one, Of course, the song was about the horrific tragedy of the ET towers, and just, you know, senseless killing and things. But we didn't want to. I didn't want to. Kind of out of the respect of the families of the people that were killed and things, I didn't want to make any direct references to that in the video. So instead, we went with something that sort of got the vibe of that without actually getting anything specific. Because it would have been real obvious just to get stock footage or get footage from the event, like news and things like that from the actual event. But I didn't want to go that route. So yeah. we wanted, and I think it succeeded in just catching the vibe of the song and the vibe of the lyrics without having anything directly relating to the actual event.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one. And of course, you know, Alibi is such a fun song. For sure. I mean, the lyrics on that are completely different than Run. That's for sure.
Yeah. That's sort of tongue in cheek and fun, and something fun to sing while you're, you know, if somebody cuts you off in traffic or something like that.
Now, when you're doing, because I mean, that one was that one recorded live at a club then when you were playing a date?
The video was shot live at a recent show here in Austin, and so that's the only one that we've used live footage for, and I thought it came across really well, and I thought it sort of got the whole the vibe of the live show, you know, what it's like to see the band live.
Is it difficult to kind of, you know, corral everything and put everything in place so that you can shoot a live video at a club, like a venue that's not actually controlled?
It is. I mean, that one, it was kind of really done off seat of the pants. Like, you know, those guys were there and it's like, you want to shoot some video? Sure. What song? Okay, great. And then we'll shoot some other stuff from other things and put it together. And that's how that one came about.
It must be like, is it different than, you know, shooting videos? I mean, like for the different bands, like do you have like different, you know, does it feel different for each band that you would shoot a video for?
I mean, there's different amounts of input, that I would have. And, like thinking back to the Dirty Looks videos, those were like sort of long drawn out things. Sometimes, there was a video for, a song called Nobody Rides for Free. And they, you know, just sectioned off this downtown LA, this block of the city, and they closed it off and set us up in an alley, put lights over the between these two buildings, over the top, and shot us like that. So it was like these big production things, and so that was a different. Everyone seems to be a little bit of a different experience, though.
Well, and things are so different now. I mean, because we don't, you know, I mean, you know, this kind of band doesn't have the same kind of, you know, I guess, budget as there existed back in the 80s.
No. Atlantic Records was paying for those videos. So.
So then when it comes down to the live show, I mean, you talk about an alibi. I mean, seeing the live show, like what is it that you want people to kind of get out of that Scream Therapy live experience?
Well, I wanted to get a sense of the energy that that comes off the stage when we play, and I think the video did a pretty good job of that, and just the whole fun vibe of the shows and everything, and I thought the video really portrayed that pretty well.
Is it difficult then to like, you know, push through as a new band, you know, to kind of create new fans?
It is. And for that, I've had to try to embrace my nemesis, which is social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so, whereas like I would ordinarily never or almost never go on like Facebook and Instagram and whatever those other ones are. however, to try to get the word out, I have had to try to embrace some of these different platforms. I even know the lingo now, to be able to get the word out. So, to the point of like when the album first came out, I spent more time just on the computer than I did playing my guitar. And after a little while, I had to change that. I was like, man, 4 months have gone by and I haven't written a song. But I've been, you know, I don't know how people that do that a lot have time to do anything else.
I understand that.
My hat goes off to them because I suppose there's a learning curve too, so you have to learn how to do it, and you probably get better at it, but it's all pretty elusive to me, and it's but I'm learning gradually.
Now, I mean, I saw on those social media posts, I saw you posted some pictures of your wife running your merch table and stuff like that. So is that the kind of thing, like, is she able to help with those kind of things for you?
Oh yeah. Yeah. She's super supportive and, I'm very, very lucky. So she helps out with all the merch, and she's like making buttons and, putting together the merch booth and all that. And she just really takes that ball and runs with it. She's supportive, excuse me, of me just in general. So.
Is she coming with, go ahead. Yeah. gonna run the Dangerous Toys merch table. Do you have merch, like, is there merch tables on the cruise?
Yeah. Monsters of Rock handles all that.
Oh, okay.
So you put in there, you order, and like they print the shirts, and you don't have to bring them, and it's all in this on the main pool deck. all the band's shirts are all for sale there, and it's this huge just market for t-shirts. So it's really cool because, you don't have to, you don't have to, other than do a little bit of accounting, you don't have to do much.
Is there anything else available besides shirts, or is it pretty much just shirts?
I think it's mostly just shirts. I think they might have some other things, but, primarily just shirts. I don't see like band koozies or,
mm-hmm.
any of the other standard merchandise around too much on that merchandise area.
So then, you know, when it comes down to, like, you know, your experience in the music industry, like, what have you learned in that time that you can kind of take and put into Scream Therapy?
Well, I think, probably I learned a lot about, songwriting, from Henrik from Dirty Looks. He he's really great at songwriting and liked to share tips with me about, you know, how to put together a song and what constituted something that works and something that doesn't and things like that. And I watched him writing lots of songs. And so I think he had a big influence on me as far as writing songs, even though the Scream Therapy songs, I don't think sound like Dirty Looks at all.
No. Sorry, so.
But probably Broken Teeth a little bit, going back. But yeah, I think just in general for the process of writing songs and how to go about writing songs and what, how to judge what works and what doesn't and how to put it all together. I got my education from him.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I can well imagine. I mean, but that's the great thing. I mean, you've probably seen a lot in your 30, you know, plus years of doing this.
I have. And it's been 30 plus is there's a big plus sign. It has been a little more than that.
Well, I do hope that that there is at least another 30 plus more years of Paul Lydell rock. And I think that everybody should go out and listen to Scream Therapy because it's a great fun band. There's a lot of like really catchy songs with a lot of you know, great hooks and riffs. So I mean, Paul, thank you so much for being on the show again.
And thanks for having me.
And I do want to give you the chance to tell everybody how they can find you, keep up with you, you know, plug that social media stuff that you love so much.
Sure. You can go to screamtherapyband.com and that's our website. And from there you can, there's links to all of the social things, the Facebook and the Instagram. There's a YouTube channel. There's a whole bunch of videos. There's several official videos on YouTube, along with there's live clips and just all kinds of other things on the YouTube channel. Lots of things to see on there. And you can contact the band through like the Facebook and the Instagram and things like that. So the place to start would be screamtherapyband.com.
Awesome. Well, like I say, I mean, it's you have a lot of great music in your history and hopefully a lot more to come. And I wish you nothing but the best in the future. And again, thank you so much for your time, Paul.
Thanks for having me on your show, Brett.
Awesome. We will speak again and I'll look forward to seeing you on the cruise next year.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
All right. Bye for now.
A gun and an alibi. Said, don't you mess with me. And I tell you why. I got a shovel, a gun, and an alibi. Yeah.